Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, and welcome to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor. I am in my kitchen in Chicago, Illinois, and as always on Monday nights, I get a chance to cook with my dear sister, Trisha, who is joining us from her kitchen in Columbus, Ohio. Trisha, what's up?
Nothing.
Wow. All right. Show's over.
How do you like that? Yeah. No. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next week. There's absolutely nothing up because everything's down. You know why?
Why?
Because we get to talk about root cellars, and those are usually down in the ground.
Wow, nice touch. Okay, that
you know
was
how,
good.
You know how I always say, like, welcome to No Chefs Allowed, where all your dreams come true. Today they do, because we get to actually have a conversation about all sorts of things, but root cellars included, which is my obsession.
I know. It's so funny. I think maybe you should start, like, a community root cellar.
A community root cellar. That's funny. People would come in. It would be like a refrigerator at an advertising agency where you put your lunch in there and then you come back to get it and somebody took it. You would be like, where are my butternut squash? They were right here.
Followed by after a series of months, everything is completely ruined and someone cleans it out.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's the office refrigerator. So the office root, the community root cellar.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I got to work through some logistics before I actually launch that.
I think you do. I think you're probably right. I was a little hasty wanting you to start yet another community project.
Another community project. That's exactly what I need.
That's right. Oh, folks, so today, let's tell them who's coming on the show today. We are excited to have Grant Olson from the, I'm going to get it wrong.
What?
The name of the... Seed Savers. I always get it backwards. The Seed Savers Exchange. Seed Savers Exchange.
I'm scared of this show.
Why?
Because I'm scared of seeds. Like,
you have dreams where the seeds come to life?
Well, I just have never really... I want to have a green thumb, and we have these gardens, and I've had them with Dad, and we grew up with gardens and stuff, but, like, when I try to do something from a seed, like a basil seed, I fail. So hopefully I'll learn something today.
I think what I'm going to learn today is to appreciate the seed more than I have. I never really thought that much about them. I'm not as much a gardener as you, but... I just thought seeds were, I guess I just didn't realize how important they are.
Oh, yeah. Where have you been?
Well, I know.
What, have you been living in a root cellar? Come on. Seeds are important. They're the giver of life.
I know they're important. I guess I just didn't realize that they were, you know, that there was so much kind of, controversy is not the right word, but interest in this. The preservation of certain kinds of seeds. I just really hadn't thought through it until I started talking to Grant and others about it, and I'm happy to have a new appreciation for seed preservation specifically.
I've never actually preserved a seed either. Like, everything that I've grown, I just eat, and then I go buy more seeds.
That's what I mean. I know, and I think that's something that I guess I just always kind of, seeds are abundant in a package at my garden store.
Right.
And that is true. But there's something to be said for, you know, recycling and sustainability and you know, continuing on with what you've harvested and have it continue to the next year, the next year, the next year. And, you know, what's kind of interesting, and I want to talk to Grant a little bit about this, is the other thing that I was reading through the Seed Savers Exchange website, and there was something on there about a guy, you know, someone who died and left their seeds to the
seed
exchange. Yeah, and he had all these, you know, seeds that were very, you know, had come from a very long lineage. I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, I mean, people who have been creating seeds and using their own seeds for years and years and years, and, you know, there are lots and lots of kind of endangered vegetables, fruits, vegetables, because people didn't save the seeds and continued to plant them, or they became too hard to plant, et cetera, and they just disappeared. So that kind of makes me sad.
That was a really touching story about the guy who left the seeds. I mean, that's like someone leaving a legacy. I mean, people are going to eat for years based on what he left behind. I like
that. And maybe forever if his seeds get into the vault. The seed vault.
It's the seed vault.
The secret seed vault.
I don't think it should be a secret and on the show.
What? You don't want anyone to get in and take the seeds from the seed vault.
Oh, you're kidding me. It's really a vault?
There are two seed vaults. We'll ask Grant about it. There's at least two. There's probably a lot more, but where seeds that endangered seeds are kept, so that there are always they live on forever, and they're kept in a controlled environment. And anyway, we'll talk to Grant. I only know little bits and pieces about it, but anyway, are you cooking today?
Let's talk about something else.
You're not cooking.
Are we talking about
I'm making
else?
A carrot pie. So this is how the root cellar conversation came up with our dear friend Grant, is that I said to him, you know, we're doing a seed show, and usually we like to cook, and obviously we can't cook seeds. So we got talking, and he said, you know, maybe what you want to do is, you know, to kind of honor, you know, seeds or vegetables that have been around for a long time, and people continue to create seeds. And anyway, he said, imagine 100 years ago, going to your root cellar this time of year, what would you find? You'd find carrots. And he said, I have a carrot pie recipe that I'm going to send you. So I'm making carrot pie today.
Are you doing your pie crust just like we learned from Ashley English?
Yeah, I was actually outside in the middle of the night because it was the coldest then with a spotlight, and I made my pie crust in the cold.
That's awesome. Yeah, so if you want to learn how to make a pie, you listen to our show with Ashley English on making a pie. But she told us the perfect conditions were cold. Everything had to be cold. So now Megan and I make pie crust outside in our backyards in the freezing cold. Just, yeah. Well, sometimes we do. But
even if you don't have the, you know, maybe the guts or the gumption to go outside and do it, bundle up because your hands are going to be cold. Everything's going to be cold. Anyway, I have a very cold pie crust in my fridge right now, and I'm chopping up carrots to make my carrot pie.
This looks like an interesting recipe. It's almost like a pumpkin pie, but with carrots.
Mm-hmm.
So carrots, brown sugar, milk or cream, cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, allspice or cloves, eggs. So you're making a carrot custard and a pie shell. Sounds kind of good. Of course, do you remember the time that you guys came over to our house for Easter? And we had Easter dinner. It was just your family and mom and dad and my family. And I made a carrot cake, and Brady was about ready. Megan Sim was about ready to dig into it, and then someone said the word carrot cake, and he just walked away. Didn't even try it. It was really good. It had cream cheese frosting, you know.
I know. He's so like that. We'll sit down to dinner, and he'll go, well, what's in this? And I have to reel off everything, and then I try and omit things like onions. So I know it'll set him off, and then he finds one. There's an onion in here. And then it's like, whoop, done, not eating it.
Kellen will have the carrot pie, though. She'll like that a lot.
She will eat the carrot pie. I will eat the carrot pie. John will take a bite of the carrot pie and say, interesting. And then that'll be the end
of it. What do these people know? They don't know what they have in the two of us, man.
I know. Someday they'll realize.
I was being a little bit lazy. It's just been a week. But now that I've read through this recipe and we're talking about it at the break, I'm going to get all my ingredients out and get started. Because A, it looks totally doable. And B, who doesn't want a pie while we talk about root cellars? Come on.
That's right. So let's take a quick break so you can go get your stuff, and we'll bring Grant Olson on from Seed Savers Exchange. and he's going to tell us all about the seed saving and exchanging community and what's going on there, and, you know, kind of enlighten us all on how to create our own seeds and ideas on how to become a member of what he's doing, the exchange, the Seed Savers Exchange. So, that said, we will be back in just a few minutes with No Chefs Allowed. Welcome back, everybody, to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor, and I'm cooking with my sister, Trisha Keels. And today we have a special guest from Seed Savers Exchange. His name is Grant Olson. And let's just get started with Grant, because we are anxious to hear all about what you're doing. Hi, Grant. Are you there?
I'm here, yeah. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hi there. Let's just get right into it. Can you give us a little rundown and overview of what Seed Savers Exchange is?
Sure. So Seed Savers Exchange is a nonprofit. We are sort of a national and even international network of farmers, gardeners, plant breeders, and chefs who are saving seeds and sharing seeds with one another. Our organization is headquartered in Decorah, Iowa, where we have a large farm, about 900 acres, and we call it Heritage Farm here. And Seed Savers Exchange, we have a mission of conserving and promoting our culturally diverse and endangered garden heritage. And we do that a few different ways. We began as a seed exchange, as sort of a mail order seed exchange. So we facilitate the world's largest seed exchange, certainly the most diverse. Our members offer about 13,000 different varieties of fruits, vegetables, flowers, herbs, and grains every year.
Wow.
We also maintain a permanent collection here at Heritage Farm, so we're growing out thousands of different varieties of fruits and vegetables every year. And then we also distribute seeds commercially. We've got a commercial catalog that largely funds the preservation work that we're doing and the facilitation of the seed exchange. We've been doing this since 1975. In 1975, our co-founder, Diane, had just gotten married. Her grandfather always grew these morning glories along his porch. She remembered as a child playing in them and enjoying time on the porch with her grandparents. And when she got married and left home, she wanted to have some of these morning glories to share with her own family. And she had gone to her grandfather's house and asked him if he had any seeds available that she could take home and grow. And he brought out a little white pill box full of seeds, passed them on to her. And he said that these were seeds that his father had originally brought to Iowa when he came from Germany in the 1800s. And that was a pretty common story. Folks that were coming into this country brought with them varieties of fruits and vegetables that were really important to their culture, to their regional cuisines, but they also brought with them things like these morning glories that reminded them of home. So Diane had not known this story, and she got a hold of these seeds, and she realized that it was something pretty special. It's something that had been stewarded by her family for a number of generations, and she felt a lot of responsibility for them. And thought, well, if something happens to me or my garden and I lose these seeds, if I'm the only person in the world that has these, there's a good chance they might go extinct. So her idea was pretty simple. The more people that were growing that particular variety, the less susceptible it was to be lost. And so she started a seed exchange by reaching out to people through Back to the Land magazines with letters to the editor that said, I'm starting a seed exchange. I've got rare seeds, and if you're interested, you should let me know. And we can start a little, and it's grown quite a lot, just from a handful of folks that first year to now, about 30,000 members.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but so there's two different things going on there. You can be a member and a part of the exchanging, so that would mean I have seeds that I'm sending to you and you're sending them out, or I can be me and buy some of these seeds from you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the seed exchange is just a member-to-member seed exchange. We have an online website, exchange.seedsavers.org, where folks can browse offerings from other members. We also publish a book every year. We call it the Yearbook. It's about 500 pages long. It's like a fruit and vegetable phone book. We send that out to our members. You page through it. You find a variety that you really are interested in, and then you contact another farmer or gardener who's offering that variety directly. So we're only involved in the exchange insofar as giving people a place to offer seeds and exchange seeds. And we also exchange or we offer varieties from our permanent collection, which aren't offered. So they're a little bit more rare and in limited quantity.
So if I see a type of seed that I want and I'm a member and I'm in the exchange, am I contacting the other member and I'm trading? Do I have to have something to offer them?
You don't have to have something to offer them. Most members offer seeds for the price of postage, so what it would cost them to send the seeds out.
Got it.
So a packet of seeds is like $3 or $4, depending on how big the seeds are. But you don't have to offer anything to request the seed exchange.
Okay.
Wow.
That's
and
pretty cool.
And then you kind of take on a, like, I guess at that point you're kind of committed that not only are you going to plant those seeds and harvest that fruit or vegetable, but you're also going to continue to create more seeds of that variety.
Yeah, and the hope is that the folks that request seeds would offer them again through our seed exchange the next year, or at the least save seeds and offer them just within their communities through a local seed library or a seed swap event that might be happening. We're sort of all about saving seeds, but also that second part of our mission is sharing seeds. And really encouraging people to, when you harvest seeds, you have so many seeds. If you harvest seeds from a lettuce plant, for example, you're going to have, just from one lettuce plant, probably enough lettuce to last the next 5 to 10 years. And so it really lends itself well to sharing the surplus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have an ignorant question. Can I ask it? Can I ask
Please.
It and you guys won't tell anybody that I asked it? But...
Sure, just everybody listening.
Just
go
the
ahead.
Three of us. Can we keep
yeah.
up with the three of us? I've never harvested a seed. How do you even go about saving your own seeds? That's probably a big question, huh?
It is a big question. It depends a lot on the species of plant and the crop type. But there are a couple plants that are fairly easy to save seeds from. If you've grown, you grow tomatoes?
Yes.
So if you grow tomatoes, tomatoes are really simple to save seeds from. If you've got a tomato that you really enjoy, wait until it's ready to eat. So when there's a little bit of give to the fruit and when the fruit's reached its final maturity color, pick the fruit off the vine, cut it in half sort of along the equator, and then squeeze the seeds and the pulp and juice out into like a plastic container, some kind of tall container, and then just let it sit for 2 days, maybe 3 days, but no longer than 3 days. As the seeds are sitting there with that pulp and that juice, it starts to ferment a little bit. And for tomatoes, this fermentation is a little bit beneficial, but it really, after 3 days, it'll start to get a little bit stinky. Rinse the seeds off, put them out on a coffee filter
to
dry.
Trisha, you might be ready. The stink all over the tennis shoes and everything in your house.
All the other fermenting things I have on my my kombucha mother and my sourdough starter, I think they're beginning to fight each other. But anyway, keep going.
So you've got the fermented seeds. You just rinse them off in a colander or in a strainer, put them out on a coffee filter to dry, and then as long as they're drying out of direct sunlight in a place that's somewhat not necessarily breezy, but someplace with a little bit of air circulation. They should be dry in a week or a week and a half, and then just throw them in a paper envelope and plant them out next year.
Wow, that seems so easy. All you have to do is think about it, is think ahead.
Right.
Not even ahead.
Like,
I mean, yeah, just
don't scarf down the tomato.
just hold back.
Yep.
But Dad, you're growing that, Trisha. I mean, don't you remember having seeds all over the? He would dry them out on a paper towel, like on the kitchen counter.
I don't remember that. I must have been too short to see the top of the kitchen counter at that point. I don't remember that at all, huh? But
yeah.
I believe you.
I can
seems
picture.
Like something he would do.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Right. Well, and it's funny, Grant, because maybe not funny, but I found Grant through Lamanda Joy, who runs the Peterson Garden Project. She's been on our show a number of times. She's just the world's greatest gardener and has created gardeners out of so many of us urban folk. But they're doing seed harvesting at the, you know, one of the gardens, and they've got a program going on right now. So she's really into it. And when I was talking to her a little bit about it, that, you know, she's like, you need to talk to Grant. So that's how we found you. But I need to learn a little bit more about what they're doing, you know, pretty much right in my backyard.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I feel like all the questions I'm asking you seem big, but are there certain heirloom seeds that are becoming really popular through your exchange?
Yeah, there are some seeds that have become really popular through the exchange, not just through the exchange itself, but also because we'll often, if we find something really rare or really unique in the seed exchange, we might make that variety available commercially. So, for example, there's a variety of watermelon. I'm not sure if either of you have heard of it, called Moon and Stars.
No.
Great big, dark green sort of picnic melon. And this watermelon was offered commercially in seed catalogs back in the 1920s and 1930s. And then it disappeared from commercial seed catalogs, which often happens. A variety maybe it doesn't sell well, or a commercial seed company gets bought out by a larger seed company, and so...
Or watermelons become
varieties.
Seedless, and
exactly,
then we have that
right.
Trouble.
So this Moon and Stars watermelon had disappeared for a number of years. We knew that somewhere someone must be growing these out and saving the seeds, and I believe in the 1980s, our co-founder Kent was doing a radio interview in Missouri, and he mentioned this watermelon that we were sort of looking for, and sure enough, there's a farmer in Missouri that had been growing it out every year, saving the seeds, and he sort of reluctantly gave some seeds to us, and we offered it in seed exchange, and then we started offering it commercially as well. So now it's a really popular watermelon, not just the Seed Savers Exchange, but other seed companies have picked it up. So that's been a really great success story, something that was almost lost forever, that really being grown out by one or just a handful of people in the country, and now something that's become really popular again.
I love that story.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to have to, I was on your website. There's like 65 things I want to buy off of it. The seed saving collection looks like it's
for
beginners.
Yeah, the seed saving collection is, yep, that would be great for folks that want to just start saving seeds. And so it has a tomato variety in there. It also has a lettuce variety and a bean variety. The lettuce variety is maybe a little bit trickier for gardeners who have grown lettuce for a long time. I know certainly when I was growing up, as soon as the lettuce plant started to bolt and leaves got bitter, that I would just cut them out of the garden, and that was it. But if you leave those lettuce plants in your garden, let them bolt, they'll flower, they get these really pretty little yellow flowers that look like dandelions, but much smaller. And then 2 to 3 weeks after the lettuce plant flowers, the seeds are formed, and they get these little feathery parachutes, just like dandelions do as well. And then just tip the lettuce plant over into a bucket and shake the plant a little bit, and the seeds fall out, and then we've got loads of seeds for next year and the next several years. And beans, if you're growing dry beans for soups, you could just take those beans, just plant them instead of putting them in a soup, and that's really all it takes for seed saving. If you've got green beans, just let them stay on the vine until the pods get really dry and brittle. Seeds will get very hard, and then you can harvest those pods and crack the seeds out and then plant them again next year. So those are three really easy plant types to save seeds from: tomatoes, lettuce, beans.
Wow. I'm going to click on it. I feel like this is a skill I should have learned a long time ago, and I mean, it's not like you don't know what's going on, but I never think about it at all.
exactly. And this is, you know, 100 years ago, if you were a gardener, you were by default a seed saver as well. Seed catalogs largely introduced new varieties, and folks typically saved their own seeds every year unless they wanted to try something new. So it is something that's very, like you said, it can be very intuitive to save seeds. You just have to sort of think about the next couple stages of that plant's life cycle, when the seeds are going to form, and then harvest them.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about the vault.
Sure.
You have to say it quietly. The vault.
Tell us about the vault. It sounds exciting.
So the vault that we have here, a seed vault is just sort of a very long-term storage for seeds. And like you had alluded to, a place to kind of protect these seeds, to really keep them in ideal conditions so that they'll last dozens of years, or maybe hundreds of years, or thousands of years, depending on which plant the seeds are from. So we have a seed vault here at our farm, and the seed vault is incidentally a part of the root cellar here. We've got an enormous root cellar that we overwinter lots of like cabbages and kales and kohlrabi, Swiss chard, and carrots. So we've got this great root cellar, and sort of underneath the root cellar is our seed vault. And that vault is kept at 3 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's very cold. It's also very, very dry in there. The seeds are kept like between 5% and 8% moisture content. And so in those conditions, they're very great for long-term seed storage. Those seeds should last many, many years. There's also a seed vault that the USDA maintains, where we have a sort of a backup collection in case something happened to our seed vault. And we also back up our seed collection in Norway as well. They have a seed vault that's drilled into the side of a mountain up above the Arctic Circle. And so we have our seeds stored there in a backup location as well.
Wow.
And that place in Norway, I heard a story about that on a podcast, actually, the one in Norway. And so it's positioned in such a perfect spot that you don't even have to control you never control the temperature of it, right? It's like, it's naturally the perfect environment for seeds.
Yeah, it's designed so that if the power goes out, the seeds will still stay cool for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's designed to be, very resilient place. And it's on an island off the northern coast of Norway, remote. I guess last year they had a job posted for a polar bear spotter at the seed vault as well. So it's kind of a different world.
We want the guy who got that job on the show. We can get in contact with him. That would be awesome. Or her.
Or her. That's
an equal opportunity job, the polar bear's father. That's awesome. Well, I think we should take a break, but I have so many questions about how to get your seeds and more of the community work that you're doing and community programs. So if you don't mind sticking around with us, we'll take a break and come back in just a minute.
Sounds good?
Yep. We'll be right back.
Go ahead.
With more No Chefs Allowed.
Welcome back, everybody, to No Chefs Allowed. I'm Megan O'Connor in my kitchen in Chicago. My sister Trisha is in her kitchen in Columbus. And we have with us today Grant Olson from Seed Savers Exchange, who has been really opening up our minds on the show today. Thank you so much for that, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so besides the seed exchange, does your farm... I think I read you have other community programs, other things you're doing up on your farm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a number of events every year out here at the farm. The next event that we have is a Spring Garden School that's coming up March 22nd, but we also have apple grafting workshops. We've got on May 3rd a rare and unusual heritage plant sale. benefit concerts. Probably our biggest event is in August. It's Labor Day weekend every year. So August 30th this year, we have our tomato tasting event. And at our tomato tasting event, we have about 80 different tomato varieties that folks can come and sample. It's a free event. We also have some workshops that are going on as well that teach folks a little bit more on how to save tomato seeds, that sort of thing. So we've got lots of events. We've got the exchange. We've got a lot of educational materials on our website, on our YouTube page, lots of videos on encouraging people to save and share seeds.
Megan, can we meet at the tomato tasting?
Yes, I was just thinking that myself. There's a trip we need to take.
Yeah, a girls' weekend to the tomato tasting.
Uh-huh. Do we have to buy tickets, Grant, or can we just show up? How's it work?
Free.
You can just show up.
All right.
Well, there you have it. Done and done on that one. Okay, so now that everybody's heard all about you and is going to want to be in contact with you, how do people become members?
Sure. So membership information is available on our website, seedsavers.org. Membership gets you access to our seed exchange. Also some other benefits. Membership, we have a quarterly publication that is sent out with stories about seeds and about other members and recipes. Membership also gives you a discount on our commercial seed purchases. You get 10% off purchases through our commercial seed catalog and our website as well.
That's awesome. Now, are you a member for life or a member for a year? How do you do that?
It's an annual membership, and we do have some lifetime membership options as well, but we have a lot of folks that are annual members that renew each year.
Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome. And I can become a member even though I don't have any seeds that I can exchange right now. Yes?
Yep. Membership supports us generally, the work that we're doing preservation-wise here at the farm and also the facilitation of the seed exchange. We have a lot of members who don't participate in the seed exchange. We wish they would, but we have lots of members who are members just to support us, to buy seeds from us through the commercial catalog as well.
Now, are your seeds available only through the commercial catalog or your website, or are they in retail locations too?
We do have seed racks in different locations. We've got many seed racks in garden stores around the country. They're really gorgeous-looking, sort of Amish-made oak seed racks. That's a big banner. That's the Seed Savers Exchange over the top.
Cool. I'm going to go look because there's one close to my house. Gethsemane Gardens has. I looked on your website and found the one closest to me. Trisha, there's one in Columbus, too.
Oh, cool.
It has it. Yeah. I can't remember. It's not exactly in your neighborhood, but it's not far.
Cool,
so, yeah,
look it up.
So we can go check that out.
I like a good road trip to buy a seed.
You've got to get prepared for the tomato road trip. You know, we'll just take small road trips in preparation for August.
A big road trip?
Yeah.
That sounds really exciting. I said earlier, though, that seeds kind of scare me, and growing from seeds kind of scare me, because when I garden, I'm kind of... And I like to blame that I have 3 children, but I can't blame my life on them, can I? But I always go and buy the plant, you know? And this will really get me started and get the kids involved with starting from seeds. So this is really exciting, Grant. I'm glad that you came on.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you have better luck this year with your seeds that you're starting out in the garden.
I'll need it. I'll need better luck.
All right. Well, y'all go ahead.
I was going to say, but now that I, like, know the seriousness of saving my seeds and getting the seeds and how important they are, I think I won't be as flippant as if you go to your local hardware store and buy a pack of kale seeds for $1. You know what I mean? They just seem more important to me now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're choosing which varieties you're going to be growing out in your garden, you do kind of have a choice, and some of that choice is sort of revolving around which sort of stories do you want to tell through your garden. Do you want to have, a plant in your garden that you don't really have a particular connection to? It's just a seed that was easy to find and something that was quick to access, or Do you want to grow something that maybe has a very long history of being grown and shared within a family, or want to find a variety that maybe has a particular history in Chicago or in Columbus? You can really have a kind of a deeper connection with some of the plants that you're growing in your garden, and those are really great to share along with the recipes and experiences of eating with other people, kind of the stories behind foods that they're enjoying.
Yeah, this is what I love about this show. You've just totally inspired me. You can check that off your list of things to do today.
Inspiring.
Humans.
Inspiring Tricia. Yeah.
If only that was on everyone's list every day. Boy, my life would be awesome. But no, I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go through your website. So it's seedsavers.org with a fine-tooth comb, because I feel like there's a lot to learn there. And
I kind of want to go to the gardening 101 or whatever that class is.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take
my gardening. I know. I think we might have to move to Iowa. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you so much, Grant, for being on the show today. We have learned a lot. You have inspired my sister, so that's good for everyone involved with her.
Exactly.
And hopefully as we, you know, embark upon our gardens as soon as this snow melts in Chicago, we will think a little harder about what we decide to plant and, you know, how we connect with those things we harvest. So thank you.
Hey, and Grant, I'm hoping we can talk off the show a little bit later about your root cellar, because you did mention the root cellar, and we didn't really get to go there, but I'd love to chat with you about it and get some tips on how to start my own, because it's a dream of mine.
Absolutely, that would be great. My wife and I did a very simple sort of root cellar stand-in this year to keep some carrots and parsnips and turnips and salsify a little bit longer. And it was, easy and mostly successful. Successful for a time, anyway.
All right. That's so all I'm asking for. Successful for a time.
The makeshift root cellar. So, folks, look for that on our blog, through Facebook. I have a feeling we are going to dive into the root cellar phenomenon here a little bit more and see if we can't add a root cellar next to our shiitake infused logs in the basement.
Exactly.
You're the kombucha starter. Mine are in the basement. So we got all kinds of projects going on. Why not add a makeshift root cellar?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, Grant, for coming on today. We really appreciate it. Happy spring to you, and we look forward to heading out to the Heritage Farm this summer for sure. So we will see you up close and personal at that time.
That sounds great.
All right. We'll talk to you then. Thanks again.
Take care.
All right, Tricia. So fun and inspiring show today. This was great, and I have not made a lot of progress on my pie, but
me neither. I
was just chatting.
I know,
but my carrots are chopped. I got that far, so now I just need to steam them, get them soft, and then put them in the food processor and make my custard, and then get my very cold pie crust out and finish this effort. So
I know, I'm annoyed at myself because yesterday I made a chicken pot pie, which I added some quail meat to.
Oh, very
completely
nice.
Completely unnecessary, but I did. So it was a quail and chicken pot pie, and I made pie crust, and in my laziness, I just did one instead of two. And had I thought ahead, I would have made two, and I would have been halfway done now. But, I know. But pie crust can be easy if you practice, and I've practiced. So I'm going to throw that together, and we're going to have carrot pie for dessert. So I'm excited about it.
All right.
Okay, I'm so glad you found him. I know I sound like a dork, but that was, kind of profound. And I want to know I know, I'm a dork. But do you think that the guy who is the polar bear spotter, you think he's a member?
I don't know. I gotta
find him.
I think now is the time to put that on Facebook. Does anybody know the polar bear spotter at the vault, the seed vault in Norway?
Norway. I'm doing it.
You know, and the podcast, I think it was, I can't remember the name. It's one of my favorite podcasts.
The Splendid Table?
Can never remember. what the name of it, but I'm going to go find it. I'll put it on Facebook. They can listen to a whole story about the Sea Vault and talk.
Oh, that would be awesome. I want to listen to it.
Yeah, there's a whole Radio Lab is what it's called, Radio Lab. And it's out at WNIC. So I'll get that. I'll try and find that story online and post it on our page so people can learn more about seed vaults.
That sounds awesome. I want to learn more about seed vaults. And I'm taking my garden seriously this year because ever since our third child, I've had a failing garden. Like, we try and I'll get a few things and then it all just goes to crud. But this year's going to be different, Megan. I'm saying it out loud.
All right.
Saying it on the radio.
For everybody to hear, this year is going to be different.
Yes. Cool.
All right, folks, it's quail month, so go get yourself some quail. Get experimenting. It's really quite fun. Your children will hate it, but do it anyway. And
my kids didn't hate it. They liked it.
My God, my kids wouldn't touch it.
You're kidding. You can eat it with your hands. They thought that was pretty cool. And it's like miniature. It's like when they did the Muppet Babies. That year when everything became a baby. This is like quail. It's chicken babies, even though they're quail. So, yes, go get one. You're probably going to find them in your frozen food section. Give it a roast. Butterfly it. Play around with it. Let us know what you do. And I am going to, my next attempt at quail this month, actually, Megan, is I'm going to butterfly it, and then I'm going to shallow fry it in duck fat. Bam!
Bam.
I know. I'm really excited.
I'm going to, because no one will eat my quail here, I'm going to take the extra quail that I have, and I'm going to make quail stock.
Oh, that's really a smart way to use it. That's really smart. Look at
because
you.
Because I got quail at the Korean market for really cheap. Like, I got 8 quail for $6 or something.
Wow.
I know. So I bought 2. I bought 2 bags, and then I did the first ones, and I got a pretty horrible reception from the fam. And so now I'm going to take the rest of those, and I'm going to make some stock out of it, and then we can enjoy the quail without them knowing.
Yeah, or you could make the stock and then take the meat off the bone and put it in chicken soup. But it's
put it into a chicken pot pie.
Yes,
that is not there.
Some gravy on it, you're good.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, all right, folks, we're going to go. We'll be back next Monday. And check us out on Facebook, No Chefs Allowed. Check out our website, nochefsallowed.com. And we'd love to hear what you're doing with quail. And we'd love to hear if you have your own makeshift root cellar. So give us a shout out and let us know what you're doing. But until next week, thanks for joining us. And we'll say goodbye from No Chefs Allowed.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.